Welcome into Southeastern Carolines 1025, 1063, the game. Happy Saturday. Happy week nine of college football, Caroline Fenton. And I am here live at Fuji Pizza Company in Germantown. It is my absolute favorite place to watch a game in Nashville. You can come by 312 Pizza Company, get a deep dish pizza, thin crust pizza. Pizza's not your jam. They've got plenty of other things on the menu. They've got a bunch of local beers on tap. They've got a bunch of TVs. It's a great place to watch a game. So come out to 312 Pizza Company, and I appreciate them for being the official sponsor and the official home of Southeastern Carolines week in and week out. So we've got a pretty good slate today. I think all season long, I've been kind of looking ahead to the slate of next week. We've got Tennessee, Georgia, which will likely decide the SEC East. We've got LSU, Alabama, which could shake things up in the SEC West. So kind of looking ahead to next week a little bit. A few teams on a bye this week, but we still got some good games today. So we'll get into all of those. I heard a couple of Kentucky apologists on ahead of me. So we'll get into Kentucky and Tennessee, what that game means for each program, what that could mean for Tennessee and their future and potentially the college football playoff and the SEC championship. And we'll get into all of that. We'll get into all the fun stuff. But I want to start on one certain team. And I think that a lot of the falling short of expectations comes from preseason expectations. I was texting with Chad Withrow about this yesterday. We had him on Stillman and Company yesterday, and he was saying, you know, I'm not going to be upset. I'm not going to be completely broken if Tennessee loses to Kentucky. And he said, because preseason, if you would have told me that Tennessee was 7-1 going into the Georgia game, then I would be elated. And I understand that. Like, I get that line of thinking that preseason of Tennessee fans knew that they only had one loss on their schedule with wins over Alabama and Florida going into the Georgia game. I think any Tennessee fan would be incredibly excited about that. And anyone would be shocked in a good way if Tennessee only had one loss on their schedule going into the Georgia game preseason. But I also think that expectations can change. But also, preseason expectations can be important enough whenever you're comparing it to, you know, what your team is actually doing on the field. And I think one certain team, if we're going to look at preseason expectations, there is one certain team that has fallen short, and that is an understatement. And that's Texas A&M. I want to just have a little kumbaya here, just between us girls, to talk about what in the world is going on in College Station. Kentucky, good Lord. Texas A&M was a top 10 team going into this season. Talking about preseason expectations. A top 10 team going into this season. And here they are, 1-3 in the SEC, 3-4 overall on the season. And things aren't necessarily looking up in College Station. So there are two separate kind of stories here, I think, with Texas A&M. And you can look at the on-the-field product for Texas A&M and more recently, off the field. So on the field, I think that Texas A&M has kind of been a disappointment, to say the least, talking about preseason expectations, the top 10 team going into this season. You at least expect your team to beat App State. Texas A&M didn't do that. And when they lost to App State, I thought, okay, you know, is that just like was that kind of a fluky thing? Was that kind of a, you know, a giant killer coming into College Station? And that was just an unfortunate loss, but they'll get right back on track. I honestly thought that's what it was. That maybe Haynes King just needed a little bit of time to get himself settled after sitting all of last season with injury. They just need to shake up at quarterback, and that's what they did. They switched the starting quarterback, and is that what they needed? I honestly looked at Texas A&M's loss to App State, and I thought, what a weird, fluky thing. You know, those kinds of things happen in college football. That's what makes college football so fun and so great. I honestly just thought that that was it. Just a fluke, a weird thing, and Texas A&M would get right back on track. Okay, well, you know, you sit Haynes King, and you start Max Johnson, their backup quarterback. He's the new starter. Is that going to get them back on track? That's what I thought. Not necessarily the case. Texas A&M has one SEC win, and it was kind of a weird win over Arkansas. And if Arkansas makes that field goal at the end of the game, Arkansas wins and Texas A&M easily could be 0-4 in conference play. And I know that's not how football works. You know, we could do that all day long. We could say, okay, well, if Alabama's kicker made that field goal, then Tennessee would, you know, would have lost to Alabama. We'd be looking at Tennessee very differently. You can play that game all day long. I understand that. But the fact of the matter is, the fact that we can even deliberate on the fact that Texas A&M should or should not have a win in the SEC after being ranked top 10 in the preseason, I think is more telling than anything. So the on-the-field product for Texas A&M has been abysmal at the very best. Jimbo Fisher is supposed to be some sort of offensive guru. Jimbo Fisher was hired at Texas A&M to do what he did at Florida State. Put up record numbers, you know, produce a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, win national championships. That's why he was hired at A&M. The fact of the matter is, he's in his fifth year at Texas A&M, and he has nothing to show for it. The absolute best thing that Jimbo Fisher has done at Texas A&M is beat Alabama, one, last year. They beat Alabama and then lost four games. The other best thing that Texas A&M has done under Jimbo Fisher is just barely missed the college football playoff in 2020 when they were ranked fifth. Just barely missed the college football playoff. That's not why Jimbo Fisher was hired. He wasn't brought into Texas A&M to just barely miss the college football playoff. He was brought into Texas A&M to make the college football playoff, to win the national championship, to go to Atlanta on a year-in and year-out basis. He hadn't done any of that. And it's year five. Jimbo Fisher makes $9 million a year. Jimbo Fisher was signed to a monstrous contract because those were the expectations for Jimbo Fisher to do what he did at Florida State. He hasn't come close to that at Texas A&M. In fact, the offensive production at Texas A&M has gone down every single year under Jimbo Fisher's helm. The average yards per game has gone down every single year under Jimbo Fisher. The expectation of Texas A&M is an 8-4, but that's the coach that Jimbo Fisher is at Texas A&M. So the on-the-field product is falling short of expectations, and that is the world's largest understatement for Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher. But that's just the on-the-field production, and that is just scratching the surface of what has gone down at Texas A&M. Because, I mean, if you tune into Southeastern Carolines, you know, week in and week out, first of all, I appreciate you. But second of all, this is not something that's new. I've talked about how Texas A&M has been mysteriously unimpressive, not just this season, but under Jimbo Fisher as a whole. There's no reason why this team should be this bad. I mean, Texas A&M had the top recruiting class in the country this year. They have more five stars than probably any other college football program in the country. I don't even know if that's a fact, but I feel pretty confident in saying that. But there's no reason why they should be this bad. But that's just on the field. Because off the field, it's a whole nother thing. Because the on-the-field issues have been a thing all season long. We've talked about them. We've gotten into it. But the off-the-field issues are something that's fairly new. Because we found out this week that Jimbo Fisher suspended three freshman players indefinitely. Now, it was reported that it was a quote-unquote locker room incident, and then we saw a report from Clay Travis earlier this week saying that those three players were smoking weed in the locker room at South Carolina. Now, I don't know if that's the truth. I believe that is the only person or outlet, you know, Clay Travis and OutKick, that have reported that. But, you know, I'll go with it. They were smoking weed in the locker room. Those three players have been suspended. Those three players were part of Texas A&M's top recruiting class in the country. All three of those players, a corner, a wide receiver, and an offensive lineman, were all five-star recruits coming into Texas A&M. And they've been suspended indefinitely. That is really bad. That is really bad from an on the field standpoint, of course, you know, losing three starters, losing three really good players, losing a lot of talent, and also, you know, kind of stunting their development as three true freshmen. You need that on the field experience, especially looking at Texas A&M's schedule, looking ahead for the rest of the season. Those are pretty big games, and that's invaluable experience that those three players are missing out on. But also, I believe that kind of shows a bit of a lack of control for Jimbo Fisher. And I feel like this reputation has kind of followed Jimbo Fisher. I know from the whole Jameis Winston crab legs at Publix thing at Florida State, and then, you know, some of the behavioral issues that we've seen from his players at Texas A&M, that, you know, Jimbo Fisher doesn't have control over his players, doesn't have control over the locker room. And that was a kind of a narrative that I always thought was a little bit overblown. Because, I mean, these are kids, and at the end of the day, like every there's going to be players on any college football program, any college football team that gets into trouble. And you might say, oh, well, Nick Saban doesn't have, you know, discipline problems. That's not true. I mean, he just had one of his starters punch a woman in the face a couple of weeks ago, and one of his starting corners got arrested over the summer. So, like, let's not act like this is something that's only exclusive to Jimbo Fisher and the Texas A&M program. But, you know, while I kind of dismiss that narrative, I'm kind of starting to see it come to fruition. Because it's one thing, you know, when a player, you know, gets into something that they probably shouldn't have done. And it's a completely different story when those players are in the locker room on game day, explicitly breaking the rules and breaking the law. Like that is a completely different story. I mean, that's different than, you know, a player doing something in the offseason that they shouldn't have done. I mean, the list goes on and on of things that players shouldn't have done in the past, that they have done in the past. This is a completely different story. And that is really, really bad. It's a bad look for the program. It's a bad look for Jimbo Fisher. And it's a bad look for those players. So it's not just on the field, it's off the field. It's not just current players, it's also recruiting. I mean, Texas A&M are the top recruiting class in the country this year. Texas A&M has the deepest pockets of probably any college football program out there. I mean, they're talking about an $80 million buyout. That doesn't sound like the most insane thing in the world to Texas A&M fans. They're talking about NIL, which Texas A&M feels like they had a leg up over every program in the country. They've got oil in Texas. You know, they've got oil in College Station. There's plenty of money in that program. But also, it feels like Jimbo Fisher has a very, very strange grasp on recruiting and a strange grasp that he has on this locker room. But Jimbo Fisher was talking about recruiting and talking about how, you know, both the on the field product and some of the off the field issues that Texas A&M is experiencing, how could that impact recruiting? And it's a very fair question to ask. But this was Jimbo Fisher earlier this week talking about exactly that, how this could impact recruiting and their classes moving on in the future.
With four losses so far, it's been pretty disappointing. What's your message to recruits about the future of the program?
Look at what we're doing and the guys that happened. And you know, also, you know, you look at that in the back, they see opportunities. Everybody says, well, I go somewhere's winning all the time. I may not play for a while. You know what I'm saying? But no, we've got good young players. Look at the young players team. Look at the young talent we have. Look at the guys making a lot of the plays, and they see it. We got a good nucleus of what we're doing, and that we're only a playoff on those games. And you sell that, and you see it, and be truthful about it. There's no – and recruiting, the key in recruiting, there's no – pitch. When you're a good recruiter, you tell the truth. Recruiting is about one thing, truth and relationships. You can draw it up 100 ways, but silly. All there is no pitch, there is no magical formula, there is no pixie dust. You build a relationship through truth and trust, and be honest with them about where you see them, what they do, and you don't base everything off 1 year either. You don't basically base things off history, what people have done, where they've been, what's happened, schools have happened, players, and see the future of what a program is. But it's based off truth and trust, not a It's what you tell them.
And that's a very fair point. And that's a really good message to send to recruits. Hey, we're not going to sell you on anything that isn't true. We want to build a relationship, and we want to be honest with you, and we want you to feel good about what you're getting into if you do choose to come to Texas A&M. I think that's a fair message. But Jimbo Fisher also went on to say, you know, as recruits, they see an opportunity to play right away. They see an opportunity. Hey, we might not have the deepest roster, so if you come to Texas A&M, you can start right away. I believe that's a pretty direct shot at Alabama and Nick Saban, and saying, hey, look at how stacked that roster is. You're going to be just one of many, And here at Texas A&M, you'll be one of one. I talked to a good friend of mine who is a very reputable source in the recruiting world. And I said, look, am I being overdramatic by thinking that this is just one of the more dramatic or one of the most insane claims that I've heard of Jimbo Fisher telling recruits, hey, you know, you can start right away here. Us being bad is a good thing for you. And he said, yeah, you know, I see where he's coming from and I get it. You know, you got to make whatever pitch you can. You've got to be able to frame things however you can. I get it. But he said, no junior or senior in high school, at least that I've ever talked to, he said this, has ever said, wow, I can't wait to go to college and play 500 snaps in my freshman year. No team does that. No player does that. No high school student wants to say, hey, I can't wait to go to a program that's been really bad the past few years. So you're getting recruited by Texas A&M, probably getting recruited by a lot of other really good programs. He said that I understand Jimbo Fisher's framing of that approach. It just doesn't make any sense. I agree. It doesn't. A recruit doesn't want to go to a program that's struggling. A recruit wants to go to a program where they see an opportunity to win. Jimbo Fisher even said that. You don't go to a program just based off of 1 year. You go to a program based off of history and tradition. Well, so far, the history of Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M has been falling short of expectations. So that message to recruits, I don't think is landing as well as Jimbo Fisher initially intended it to. But Texas A&M, what's going on, man? What in the world is going on? 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get your calls, your texts, and your thoughts on that. But coming up next, there's a game that's always fun that I always look forward to every year. But not this year. Is that a bad thing for college football? We'll get into that coming up next. It's Southeastern Carolines. I'm Caroline Fenton. It's 1025-1063 The Game.
Way back in 1990, if you remember, before 90, Georgia had won, I think, 15 of the last 20. And the Gators were wanting to move the game out of Jacksonville. Some of them told me, Coach, we can't beat them over there. We're cursed or there's a jinx or something. I said, no, they're just kicking our butts over there. That's the reason they're.
On the Qualified Mom show earlier this week, previewing the world's largest cocktail party, Florida, Georgia, and kind of the history that that game carries. But before we get into that game and kind of my thoughts on that, first and foremost, while we're discussing Georgia, I would be remiss to mention, if I did not mention that Vince Dooley, a legendary Georgia football coach, passed away yesterday at the age of 90. So he passed away peacefully and he lived a very good life. But my thoughts, my prayers are with the Dooley family, but the Georgia fan base as a whole, because I know that he was very, very special to the Bulldog family. But the world's largest cocktail party comes down today. Now, somebody asked me this question. I believe it was on Robbie and Rex Road at some point in the college football season. And I believe Robbie asked me, which do you think is the stronger side of the SEC? The SEC West or the SEC East? Now, if you would have asked me this question literally any other year, I would have said, well, it's obviously the SEC West. I mean, it has Alabama, first and foremost. LSU is usually competitive. Auburn's competitive. Ole Miss is usually competitive. Texas A&M, Auburn. I mean, Arkansas, like it's a difficult side of the conference to be in. It is arguably the most difficult division in all of college football. But this year, that's different. Because historically, in the SEC East, Tennessee was down bad. Kentucky was down bad. You got Vanderbilt, South Carolina, and Missouri, which pretty much always down bad. But it always came down to the world's largest cocktail party. It always came down to Georgia and Florida. And usually this game that we're going to see today decided the SEC East. The winner of that game usually punched their ticket to Atlanta. That's kind of how it felt year in and year out. Maybe that wasn't the truth, but that's always how I felt, at least. Maybe you felt differently, but I always felt like this game that we're going to watch today, Georgia and Florida, two powerhouse programs in the SEC East, would decide so much of the postseason. But I don't know if it's just me, but I feel very unexcited about this Georgia-Florida game because I know the outcome. You know, Georgia is the reigning national champion. And while Georgia is probably experiencing a little bit of it's really difficult to win and be dominant after winning a national championship, Georgia's still undefeated, even though it may have been a little bit of a rocky road to get to this point. You know, a narrow win over Missouri, giving up 20-something points to Kent State. They haven't been perfect, but Georgia has found a way to win regardless. And Georgia's a really good football team. I mean, they're not the number one ranked team in the country for no reason. I feel like we're not talking about Georgia enough, just simply because that's the expectation for Georgia and the reigning national champion. And that's what we expect from Georgia week in, week out, is just to be dominant. Maybe that's just not a fun thing to talk about, but I just think we're not talking about how good Georgia is. Maybe that's just on me. But, you know, and also you look at Florida, first year head coach, that's kind of dealing with trying to repair some of the damage that was done by Dan Mullen and that program last year, kind of the downfall of Dan Mullen and the Georgia program that we saw in 2021. So, you know, Florida's rebuilding. They're doing what they can. Billy Napier is trying to install his culture and he wants to get his players in and get his system in there. So, you know, Florida is going to be on the up and up. It's just this year, it's just not necessarily their year. And Georgia, it very much so could be their year. Last year was their year. So all of that to say, I'm just not all that excited about this Georgia-Florida game. And to be completely honest with everybody, I think that's a bad thing for college football. I think college football is just more fun when these games matter, when these types of games matter, when these Georgia and Florida, when those games are important. When Auburn and Alabama, those kinds of two SEC blue bloods and that are just, you know, bitter rivals, when those games are going to be interesting. When Georgia and Florida is kind of a pick'em, and when we could really talk about the X's and O's and, you know, which team is gonna, you know, is gonna come out on top. What is it gonna come down to? Is it a battle of the quarterbacks? Is it a battle in the trenches? When we can really talk about how this could be a battle. And it might be. You know, it really could be. College football's weird. Things happen all the time. Georgia's made games a lot closer than they probably should have been so far this season. We saw that against Missouri, which is still just wild to me that that happened, that Missouri was beating Georgia at a certain point just a couple of weeks ago. But we can't really do that this year. You could, but I think I'd probably bore you to death talking about the Anthony Richardson versus Stetson Bennett debate, because I don't think there is one. And I just think that college football is better when these rivalries matter, when these blue bloods are good, when these blue bloods compete against one another and it really is just going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be a battle and it's appointment watching. I said the same thing about Tennessee, Alabama. I said, this is such a good thing for college football when one of the oldest rivalries in the SEC matters. And whenever everyone in the country wants to tune into it. That's what Tennessee, Alabama was for the first time in a long time. And it was good. It was fun. People who aren't fans of either of those teams probably were planning their days around that game. That's a good thing for college football when it's competitive, when we can have those kinds of conversations about Tennessee potentially upsetting Alabama and it being not a ridiculous conversation. I feel like if I got up here in front of the mic and talked to you all about Florida potentially upsetting Georgia, you would roll your eyes at me because that just doesn't seem like a realistic thing. Maybe Florida does. Maybe I'm crazy and I should be getting into these things. I don't see it. The spread is 22.5. I believe it also has shifted even further than that. Depends on different sportsbook use. I use Caesars, my official sportsbook. I love Caesars. There you go. It's already grown to 23.5. When Florida, Georgia is expected to be that much of a blowout, whenever if you want to put money on Georgia on the money line, it's -2300 odds. It's just no fun. It really isn't. And, you know, there's plenty of other competitive and fun games today. Kentucky and Tennessee is one of them. That game's more fun when it's competitive. And I'll get into all my picks and, you know, my expectations for these games coming up next. But all of this to say, it's a bad thing for college football when Florida's not good. It's a bad thing for college football when Georgia, Florida, the world's largest cocktail party, when Steve Spurrier's on the Paul Feinbaum show talking about the history of that game from when he was a player and a coach at Florida, whenever it goes that deep and it historically has meant that much and it just doesn't mean anything. And to me, I'm like, wait, what was the 2:30 game today? Oh, yeah, it's Florida, Georgia. Oh, okay. Whenever that's like that, it's just no fun. I want Florida to be back. And as an LSU fan, I just love the fact that Florida is not very good. But as a college football fan, Florida needs to be good. This game needs to matter. And I hate that it's not appointment watching for me today. I'll watch. That's just not going to feel as fun. It's just not going to mean as much. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into your calls and your texts coming up next. But also, I want to get into my games of the day, my picks of the day, my thoughts on the SEC slate of the day. It's Southeastern Carolines. I'm Caroline Fenton. It's 1025-1063 The Game.
Yeah, it's, you know, I could give you coach speak and tell you it doesn't mean anything, and I'd be lying to you. I mean, I think it's just a sign that we're headed in the right direction, and it was a big step for us to be a two-win team 2 years ago, and then in year one to win a bowl game, and now in year two to be nationally ranked halfway through the season is a good step for our program, but it's not the end goal. I didn't come here to just be 25th in the country, and our players didn't come here just to be ranked in the top 25. We all have higher expectations than that, and we've got to continue to work the rankings. The only one that matters is the one at the end of the season. There's no doubt about that. But to be ranked right now in mid-October or late October is a testament to the people in this program.
Shane Beamer, South Carolina head football coach, on Paul Feinbaum earlier this week. South Carolina, a new top 25 AP poll entrance for the Gamecocks. Good for Shane Beamer. Good for South Carolina. They're 5-2 on the season so far. That was not on my bingo card. With wins over Texas A&M, with wins over Kentucky, and you know you can pick apart those wins all you want. A win over Kentucky with their backup quarterback, a win over Texas A&M, and probably one of the more disappointing years, or the most disappointing year in Jimbo Fisher's tenure at Texas A&M. But still, good for South Carolina. Excited for them. I'm not buying into it. I don't think they're a good team. I think that Shane Beamer is such a boob. I think that he is such a loser. But good for South Carolina. They take on Missouri today, and I'll get into my picks for that game. But I want to start with the top of the slate, the SEC games of the week. First and foremost, we've got Arkansas and Auburn. And, you know, this is another game that I don't know what it is. It just doesn't do it for me. I don't know if it's the fact that I'm just waiting for Auburn to fire their coach, and I'm kind of wondering, like, what are they waiting for? If they wanted to fire Brian Harsin in his first year, here we are in his second year. Auburn has won one SEC game, lost three of them. I believe they're on a three-game losing streak. What are you waiting for? Just fire the guy. They clearly aren't very happy with him, but I digress. Because Arkansas and Auburn tip off. They're both coming off of the bye week. Auburn has won this game the last 6 years, which I feel like this kind of comes up every week with Arkansas. Like when Arkansas played Alabama, it was, you know, Alabama's won this game the last 16 years or whatever it was. I'm like, yes, but this is a different Arkansas team. Arkansas used to be like the Vanderbilt of the SEC West. Arkansas used to be one of those games that, you know, an SEC West team could look at and say, oh, win, easy. Arkansas isn't that anymore. Even though I don't think Arkansas is an elite team, I don't think that Arkansas is going to be what we kind of expected Sam Pittman to become at Arkansas. They're not the laughing stock of the SEC West anymore. So that's something. I think that Arkansas fans can be happy about that. But Arkansas, Auburn, I believe the spread on this game is Arkansas -3.5. Honestly, this is kind of a tough one because you could look at that and say, oh, easy. You know, Auburn sucks. I'll take Arkansas -3.5. I don't like that little hook there because Arkansas has made their job a little bit more difficult than they needed it to be so far this season. And Auburn is one of those teams that even though they're going to fire their coach, even though they're pretty awful, the record shows it, even though they could easily be winless in the SEC if that Missouri receiver just holds on to the football in the end zone, doesn't fumble in the end zone at the end of the game, Auburn is a team that doesn't quit. Auburn hung 30-something points on Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss just a few weeks ago. Auburn was up 17-0 against LSU when they played earlier this season. Auburn has something about them where I look at the makeup of that team and I think they should be terrible with everything surrounding that program, with, you know, the boosters wanting that coach out, with all of the discussion about Auburn football being about how they hate their coach and they're going to fire him, with a quarterback controversy, with, you know, putting, you know, quarterbacks in and taking them out. It was TJ Finley, and then it was Robbie Ashford, and then it was, you know, switching them back and forth. TJ Finley throws one interception, and Robbie Ashford goes in. He throws one interception. TJ Finley goes in. All of that. TJ Finley's injured, and he's out for the next few weeks, so their backup quarterback is in. Just looking at everything that Auburn has been facing this season, I think that they should be worse than they really are. And if you look at the record, you're probably thinking that I'm crazy by saying that. But Auburn has put up a fight in every single game that they have played this season. And they haven't come out on top in a majority of those games. But still, I think we have to give Auburn, a little bit of credit for what they have done this year, even though it doesn't show up in the win and loss column, for the fight that they put up this season. Now, all of that being said, I'm still taking Arkansas -3.5. I think that KJ Jefferson is a damn good quarterback. He's not going to be an NFL quarterback, but in the SEC, he can win you some games now. KJ Jefferson went out against BYU and put up a freaking game. He was 29 of 40 for 367 yards passing, 5 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. Arkansas had almost 650 yards of total offense against BYU and 34 first downs. 34! They turned the ball over only once, and they converted on 12 of 15 third downs. This Arkansas team is pretty damn good. KJ Jefferson, I don't think, gets enough credit. I feel like a lot of people label KJ Jefferson as simply a mobile quarterback, and that's all he'll be, maybe irresponsible throwing the football. Maybe there's a good bit of truth to that, because I think KJ Jefferson is the type of quarterback that defers to his legs, maybe sometimes more than his arm. Is that a product of KJ Jefferson, or is that a product of him losing a majority of his wide receiver core in this season? I think there's a little bit of truth to both of those things. But I think we don't give KJ Jefferson enough credit. I don't think we give this Arkansas team enough credit, even though the win and loss column probably doesn't reflect what a lot of our preseason expectations were for Arkansas. I think they're good enough to be able to beat Auburn by more than 3.5 points. So I'm going to give credit to Auburn for the fight they put up this season, but I think just based off of the momentum that Arkansas has, off of that huge win against BYU, going to Utah, you know, beating BYU on their field, coming off the bye week, you know, KJ Jefferson getting a little bit of rest because he was banged up earlier this season, I think they're going to be able to cover the 3.5. Florida, Georgia. I touched on this game last segment that this game just doesn't seem very fun because normally this game is so competitive and it doesn't feel competitive this year. I don't think it's going to be competitive. Georgia's favored by 23.5. That spread has only grown since the opening spread. I believe it opened at 21.5, came to 22.5, and now it's at 23.5. I'm actually going to take Florida to cover that 23.5, but I still think that Georgia wins by at least 3 touchdowns. And I think that's a pretty good bet there. And you say, hey, Georgia's going to win by 3 touchdowns, but you still can cover, Florida can still cover the spread in that scenario. I'll take that. I think that spread's just too big for me to take Georgia to cover it. Even though so many times I have taken Georgia's opponent to cover the spread when it's a massive spread, like 35.5 or something ridiculous like that. I'll take Georgia's opponent because I think that number's huge and Georgia still blows them out by like 50. I still haven't learned my lesson. But I do think that, you know, with this stage and what this game means for both programs, I think Florida's at least going to put up a little bit of a fight. But I am going to take Florida to cover the 23.5. That's just a pretty big spread for such a big game on both sides. Third game of the week, Missouri and South Carolina. What a not fun and unimpressive matchup. Also, we had Missouri Vanderbilt last week, which was a very not fun and very unimpressive matchup. South Carolina's got all the momentum in the world. Like I just mentioned, Shane Beamer was on the Paul Feinbaum show earlier. He said, hey, South Carolina was a 2-win football team not too long ago. South Carolina went to a bowl and won a bowl last year. South Carolina is now the 25th ranked team in the country. Now, do I think that they are the 25th best team in the country? No, I do not. But I think that South Carolina has been able to capitalize on a lot of the opportunities that they have been given, playing Kentucky with a backup quarterback and winning, you know, playing Texas A&M in one of their more down years, at least in recent history, being able to get a win at home. That's really big for South Carolina. So I'm going to take South Carolina to win and to cover against Missouri, just because I think all of the momentum that this South Carolina team has is palpable, especially for a program that's kind of been, you know, starved for at least a little bit of success. I think we all look at South Carolina like one of the bottom feeders in the SEC, because that's what they've been, you know, the past couple of years, the team struggling to win games. But let's not forget, under Steve Spurrier, South Carolina was beating Clemson consistently. That, you know, the Tennessee-South Carolina games were always competitive, and South Carolina won those games. South Carolina was a very decent team that won 8, 9, or 10 games under Steve Spurrier. South Carolina is not a bad program. They've just had some down years trying to figure out their next solution at head coach after Steve Spurrier retired. Now, do I think that Shane Beamer is the solution at coach? No, honestly, I really don't. Like I said, I think it's kind of a boob. But South Carolina's got the momentum. Missouri is struggling. Missouri is truly down bad. I mean, Missouri has only won one conference game so far this year, and it was against Vanderbilt last week. They're 3-4 on the season. I think that Eli Drinkwitz's seat is heating up a lot in Columbia. I don't think they're very pleased with what he's done so far. So I think Missouri is struggling. I think they're down bad. I think South Carolina has all the momentum in the world. So give me the team that's hot versus the team that is not. So I'm going to take South Carolina to beat Missouri and to cover. And I will get into the rest of the games of the week and the rest of my picks of the day coming up next at Southeastern Carolines. I'm Caroline Fenton. It's 1025, 106 for the game.
What if Kentucky wins on Saturday? Then what's coming out of your mouth?
I'll never shut up. I can just go ahead and tell you. Because the thing is, you know, in 2014, for people who are listening, Kentucky beat Louisville in the Sweet 16. And I think it broke Louisville fans. I don't think they've ever gotten over it.
It hurt, and I have not.
I don't think they have, because that was a Louisville team that was beloved. They thought they might repeat as national champions, all juniors and seniors. That Kentucky team had struggled all year. They were all freshmen. They were an 8 seed. And then Kentucky goes and beats them when Louisville was ahead the entire game, and Kentucky makes a comeback right at the end. I don't think Louisville fans ever got over it, and I think it's one of the most painful losses they ever took. If Kentucky were to go to Knoxville and win Saturday, I think that would be just as painful for Tennessee fans. To have beaten Alabama, to be looking at a potential national playoff bid and lose it and be out of the playoff because you lost to Kentucky, I'm not sure they could ever get over that, which is why it would make me very, very happy.
That was Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, on Stillman & Company earlier this week. And I'm just sitting here chuckling, listening to all these cuts from that interview, because Jared and I, we were literally laughing out loud when we had Matt Jones on the show earlier this week, just going off about this Kentucky-Tennessee game. And rightfully so, each side should be fired up about this game. But one thing that Matt Jones mentioned that just struck a chord with me just now: Kentucky fans, stop comparing this game to basketball. It is so irrelevant. If Kentucky loses this game and Kentucky says, yeah, well, we're a better basketball program, nobody cares. Stop comparing this game to basketball. Please, we get it. You're a powerhouse basketball program. You're a blue blood basketball program. This is football. We don't care about basketball, so stop bringing it up. That just struck a chord with me just now, listening to that cut. But Kentucky, Tennessee, I mentioned how the world's largest cocktail party needs to be fun. It's good for college football, and it's just not fun this year. Kentucky, Tennessee is fun this year, and that is what is so fun about today and kind of making up for the world's largest cocktail party is how Kentucky, Tennessee is going to be a good and competitive game. Now, what I think is interesting, after Tennessee beat Alabama, my first thought was Georgia. Okay, you beat Alabama. Now, the next most difficult test on your schedule is Georgia. You beat Georgia, you win the East, you go to Atlanta, you're going in undefeated. That's what I thought. But I think a lot of Tennessee fans were like, whoa, 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 pump the brakes. Kentucky. There's a lot of conversation about a potential upset brewing in Knoxville today. Now, I think that that is something that we could absolutely talk about. I think that Kentucky is a team with a really good quarterback, a quarterback who, from the NFL draft gurus, are slating to be drafted higher than Hendon Hooker. And if you're looking at each of those quarterbacks, which I think will probably have a brighter future in the NFL, I probably would maybe lean Will Levis, but the better quarterback that we've seen this season has been Hendon Hooker. And you could say, oh, it's a product of the system. It doesn't matter because he's been the better quarterback so far this season. And that's what matters this year. We can talk about the NFL draft later, but that doesn't matter right now. So far, Hendon Hooker has been the better quarterback. Hendon Hooker has been the quarterback that's in discussion for the Heisman. Will Levis, on the other hand, has not. Now, you know, Will Levis has been dealing with injury, and Kentucky was without Chris Rodriguez for the first four games of the season, and he really was a good bit of their offense last season. He was averaging like almost 150 yards a carry last season. A game last season. So he has been unbelievable for Kentucky, and he's kind of been ramping up the past couple of weeks. I think that we're going to see a big day for Chris Rodriguez because I think, you know, against Ole Miss, he was just kind of starting to heat up, and then he's gotten better game after game. So I think we're going to see a big day from Chris Rodriguez, but I just think this Tennessee team is too freaking good. The conversation all season long with Tennessee has been, yeah, they can give up 99 points, but they're going to score 100. I just don't think that this Kentucky offense is good enough to put up enough points to be able to beat Tennessee. I think this offensive line doesn't protect Will Levis enough to be able to put up those kinds of points. Now, Kentucky has a really solid defense. That's going to be kind of tricky for Tennessee, but also Alabama's is better and Tennessee hung 52 on them. So I hear all the conversation about a potential upset, about some people thinking that they're being tricky by picking Kentucky to win this game. I just think that Tennessee is too good. You could say, well, maybe Tennessee's looking ahead to Georgia. I don't think so. I think that we saw against Alabama that this is a team that can also be mentally tough just as much as they are physically tough. So I'm taking Tennessee to cover the 11.5. I've seen on some sports books it's listed as 12.5. I think whatever it is, I think Tennessee is going to be able to win by 2 touchdowns. If Tennessee goes out there and takes care of business and has been the team that they've been all season long, effective, efficient, high-powered, you know, you could be at, you know, your own 40-yard line and throw the ball 70 yards downfield for a touchdown. That's what we've seen from Tennessee all season long, and I don't expect that to change today. So I am going to take Tennessee to cover the 11.5, 12.5, depending on whichever sportsbook you use. I use the Caesars Sportsbook app listed as 11.5, so I'm going to take Tennessee to cover that 11.5. And the final game of the day, it's actually my lock of the day. I'm a little bit confused and honestly a little bit scared why Vegas has this spread so tight. Ole Miss, Texas A&M. The spread opened at 2.5. We were doing 6-pack picks yesterday on Stillman and Company. It was 1.5, and I was shocked that it was so low. Last that I checked this morning, it's Ole Miss favored by 3.5. Don't like that hook there, but I'm going to take Ole Miss to cover that. I think that spread is vastly, vastly overrating Ole Miss's loss to LSU last week. Yeah, Texas A&M has a fine defense. Texas A&M has everything stacked against them. All the conversation about Texas A&M this week, and honestly so far this season after they lost to App State, has been, what's wrong with Texas A&M? Three of their players are out. Their starters, a starting wide receiver, is out in addition to Anaya Smith, who got hurt against Arkansas and is out for the rest of the season. They're without him. The freshman wide receiver who got suspended, corner, and an offensive lineman, all three starters. I think this Texas A&M team is just doomed for the rest of the season. So I'm taking Ole Miss to cover. I think they're going to be angry after that loss against LSU. So give me Ole Miss. I think that's an easy, easy bet. I think that is easy money. I think Ole Miss is going to be able to roll against Texas A&M. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you to the 312 Pizza Company for being the most gracious host for me every single week. They are one of my favorite places in town, a great place to watch a football game. They've got all the games on a bunch of different TVs over here. The people here are wonderful. They're so, so kind. So come out to 3MT Pizza Company, grab some pizza, grab some beer, watch some games. Appreciate them for hosting me every single week. We will see y'all next week. We've got Tennessee, Georgia, LSU, Alabama, a great slate coming up next Saturday. So I will be here to preview it with all of you next Saturday at 10 a.m. It's Southeastern Carolines, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, ESPN Radio is up next.